a lot of times our politicians or our state is in denial to accept that pollution kills.
India's capital being hit twice. It's Monday, November 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, making the election official, pulling troops from Afghanistan, spicy Afghan income, an acting role close to home, celebrating press freedom. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India's capital, New Delhi, is battling twin health emergencies as it copes with deadly air pollution that spikes in winter months and a record surge in coronavirus cases. Doctors say the city's fight against the pandemic has become harder as the toxic air makes the city more vulnerable to the virus. Anjana Pasricha reports.
Raju Idnani is among thousands in the Indian capital who grapple with respiratory illnesses every winter when the city is enveloped in acrid smog. This year, Idnani feared a double blow when he fell ill.
That's the first thing that comes into your head, you know, COVID. That's it. So, yes, I was totally hassled about this. And I took my temperature at least 10 times a day because of this.
There was reason to worry. COVID-19 cases in the Indian capital have surged to record highs, even as they decline sharply in the rest of the country. Doctors say the city's hazardous air has made it more vulnerable to the virus.
Actually, what does pollution do? It dysregulates the immune system of the person. Once it dysregulates the immune system, you are much more prone to infections. And COVID-19 being a respiratory virus, it has become more prevalent and it has been seen that it can increase infection and deaths by about 9 to 10%. In some studies, they have even gone up to 15%.
At the start of winter, authorities acknowledged the problem.
Pollution has started. The sky is filled with smoke, and this is worsening the situation with coronavirus.
Authorities are flying in doctors and paramedics and adding intensive care, unit beds and ventilators as hospitals become overwhelmed. Crowds in markets during the recent festive season have also raised concerns.
We are worried because the way the numbers are going up, it might be difficult for the Delhi healthcare system to handle it.
The return of the toxic haze is a huge disappointment for a city that glimpsed blue skies and breathed clean air during the lockdown earlier this year. Environmentalists say this was inevitable, as little has been done to eliminate sources of pollution. Construction dust, emissions from fires set to crop stubble, and the 10 million vehicles plying Delhi's streets.
Linkages between environment and health needs to be paramount and needs to be really hammered down again and again. And that is something that we see that a lot of times our politicians or our state is in denial to accept that pollution kills.
With the dirty air set to hang over the city until spring, Delhi's battle with twin health emergencies could be long and hard. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
More than 58 million people around the world have been infected with the coronavirus, according to the Johns Hopkins Resource Center. The U.S. continues to lead the world in infections with more than 12 million cases, followed by India with 9 million infections and Brazil with 6 million. The virus has claimed more than 1.3 million lives. More than 250,000 of those deaths were in the United States. Almost 1,400 frontline healthcare workers in the U.S. have apparently died from COVID-19, according to a joint investigation by the British newspaper The Guardian and Kaiser Health News. One-third of the dead healthcare workers were nurses, according to the study. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. You'll find more as well on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our website. That's voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thai bad students slam government as dinosaurs. Tibetan government leader makes historic White House visit. U.S. optimistic economic sanctions hurting Chinese company in Cambodia. Experts to U.S. lawmakers say Afghanistan drawdown a mistake. Pricey red spice gains popularity among Afghan farmers. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more can be found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. We invite you to stop by our voanews.com website as well. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Following a hand recount of ballots, officials in the U.S. state of Georgia have certified U.S. presidential election results in that state, confirming that President-elect Joe Biden defeated President Donald Trump. Yet the president shows no signs of conceding. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara has the latest.
Despite supporters of President Donald Trump storming into the state capitol in Atlanta earlier this week, demanding investigation on claims of election fraud, on Friday, officials reaffirmed that Joe Biden has won the state of Georgia, following the largest hand recount of ballots in American history.
The numbers reflect the verdict of the people, not a decision by the Secretary of State's office or of courts, or of either campaigns.
Meanwhile, the Trump campaign continues to claim the election was plagued by fraudulent voting.
That could have been Mickey Mouse. That could have been a dead person.
A claim repeated by the president, who on Friday added another accusation that pharmaceutical companies delayed announcing COVID-19 vaccine findings until after the election, a claim the companies have denied.
We had Big Pharma against us. We had the media against us. We had Big Tech against us. We had a lot of dishonesty against us.
His strategy is consistent with his strategy all 4 years of governing. If he doesn't say it, then it can't be true. So just like we had fake news, now we're having obviously fake elections and trying to cast doubt on that institution just as he did the media.
Trump's legal team has failed to provide evidence of ballot fraud, a fact the Biden campaign is eager to point out.
The Trump campaign and their allies have now lost a staggering 28 lawsuits in the 17 days since Election Day.
Failing in the courts, the Trump campaign has been floating the idea that Republican-controlled state legislators should dismiss Biden's victory in their states and assign electors that will vote for Trump instead. The move is unlikely to succeed, but damage to the perceived legitimacy of the election may already be done.
The outcome of these efforts not so much will be that we're going to observe Trump being listening to, you know, Trump's second inaugural on January 20th. But rather that we're going to have tens of millions of Americans who are convinced that Biden cheated his way and that our politics are to their core rotten, which will yield a country that's all but ungovernable.
In a Morning Consult poll conducted in late October, 70% of Republicans said election results will be reliable. In mid-November, this number dropped to 27%. 45% of Republicans say Trump should concede eventually unless he can back up fraud claims, and 27% say he should not concede no matter what. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, the government of Hong Kong's Special Administrative Region strongly condemned the foreign ministers of Australia, the United States, Britain, Canada, and New Zealand for what it called misrepresentation of the decision by China's top legislature to disqualify four members of the Hong Kong Legislative Council. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. Officials in Afghanistan say about two dozen mortar shells hit downtown Kabul early Saturday, killing at least eight people and injuring 31 others. Afghan Interior Ministry spokesman Tariq Aryan said the rockets that were fired from the back of two vehicles slammed into different parts of the capital. The Islamic State terror group claimed responsibility for the attack, according to Site Intelligence Group, that tracks online activity of jihadist organizations. A spokesman for the Taliban insurgent group denied its involvement. Meanwhile, experts have testified on Capitol Hill that drawing down U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan from 4,500 to roughly 2,500 is a mistake. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has reaction to the U.S. Acting Defense Secretary's withdrawal announcement last week.
After replacing top civilian leaders at the Pentagon, the Trump administration made a major announcement.
By January 15th, 2021, our forces, their size in Afghanistan, will be 2,500 troops.
The change cuts the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan by nearly half, and it means the U.S. will soon have its fewest troops there since the start of the war in 2001. But with peace talks ongoing, expert after expert warned lawmakers Friday that the move was throwing away America's most crucial bargaining chip.
In my view, the drawdown policy announced Tuesday was a mistake. What the administration announced on Tuesday is the slower, more expensive version of failure.
We are getting nothing in response to that drawdown. That has been the problem with these talks from the beginning. By sitting down with the Taliban without the Afghan government in the room, they knew from the start that this is a negotiation on the terms of our surrender.
U.S. forces toppled the Afghan Taliban in 2001 following an invasion that had strong public support in the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks carried out by Al-Qaeda, whose leadership was being harbored by the Taliban. 19 years later, American public opinion has changed. President Trump won office in 2016, promising to withdraw from foreign conflicts. And Congressman Bradley Byrne says people in his district are tired of the war.
They think 19 years, thousands of lives, American lives lost, all these injuries, all these hundreds of thousands of servicemen and women lives disrupted, obviously billions and billions and billions of dollars, you know, enough. Now, I think they probably would support a continuing counterterrorism effort, okay? They don't want Al-Qaeda to get back in control there.
But therein lies a contradiction, experts said, because unlike the Afghan government that fights Al-Qaeda, the Taliban has shown no evidence that it will stop protecting the terror group.
Me, it's not just a counterterrorism issue. It is also a prevention of the overthrow of the government. And so what does 2,500 give us versus something closer to 4,500 or 5,000?
Absent a peace deal, the experts testified that the further withdrawal of American forces will likely shift the balance of power in the military campaign in favor of the Taliban, putting a potential peace deal even further from reach. And with coronavirus on the top of President-elect Joe Biden's priorities, it's unclear how his administration will handle any fallout from the move. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Vietnam has threatened to shut down Facebook unless the social media platform adheres to the guidelines set forth by the government to censor political content. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. Saffron is a highly coveted spice that can cost up to $10,000 a kilo. VOA's Ibrahim Rahimi reports on Afghan efforts to cultivate the pricey red spice.
This area is called Ghaziabad, a small area of Thani district in eastern Afghanistan's host province. Local agricultural experts are here to educate farmers about the economic benefits of planting and growing saffron.
In Thani, as well as in other districts, we have been practically educating them and will also work with them in the future to raise awareness about the importance of saffron and transfer them the best practices to plant and cultivate this lucrative product.
Local farmer Qazi Mohammadi has set aside half an acre of his land for saffron cultivation. He's willing to try saffron because the wheat, maize, and other crops he's been growing for 20 years aren't making him enough money.
Maybe we will be better off with saffron because other crops didn't give us much. All I can say is that if this thing succeeds here, the whole area will start cultivating it and the economy will boost in the area.
By weight, saffron is often considered one of the most expensive spices in the world. While consumption of saffron has long been a Central Asia tradition, it is working its way into the Western world. Farmers here and local officials say they hope saffron could take the place of two of the region's other cash crops, poppy and marijuana.
The good thing about this area is that no one here cultivates poppy. If saffron gives a better yield than poppy and cannabis, then I'm sure people in other areas will also stop harem crops.
Khos province traditionally sees heat waves and lacks enough rain for farming. Luckily for Mohammadi and local farmers here, saffron cultivation doesn't require a lot of water. Local agricultural department have been promoting saffron in Khos province for the past 7 years, providing saffron seeds and training. For Ibrahim Rahimi in Khos, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, Ellen Wong is a Cambodian-Canadian actress well known in Hollywood. But as VOA's Chetra Chap reports, her latest role hits very close to home.
Hey, yeah, I'm here.
Ellen Wong stars in the Life of Music, a story about the intergenerational impact of the Cambodian genocide on a family, told through a song. The 35-year-old Toronto actress plays a young American girl who visits her relatives in Cambodia for the first time. She wants to record everything she sees for her dying refugee mother in America.
Matt, no? I told her everything I see, she sees too.
You played the lead role, Hope, in a Life of Music movie. And coming in, what was your expectation?
I was going to be working and shooting in Cambodia, and I knew that it was going to be different there. Not just because, you know, I'd never worked there before, but also just there were going to be so many emotions and feelings and things that were really close to home for me.
In the film, her character Hope learns about what her mother went through before and during the Khmer Rouge, a communist regime that killed 1.7 million people in the late 1970s.
It is about the history of what our parents went through, but it's about the journey of a girl who's really got her foot in two different worlds and is trying to fit into both and make herself feel whole.
Her parents fled the Khmer Rouge genocide and settled in Canada, where Wong was born. Wong says she can see herself in the character Hope.
You don't really quite understand it until you visit Cambodia and you're there and you feel the country and the people and the culture and the history, that there's this moment, oh, I get it. I get my family, I get my parents, I get why they are the way they are, I get why I'm the way I am.
Wong says working on the film helped her understand that her parents didn't get to pursue their own dreams.
They had to work really hard to work and survive. Whereas for me, I realized it was different, you know, like I was able to take risks and make mistakes.
In the Life of Music, which was selected as the Cambodian entry for the Best International Feature Film at the 92nd Academy Awards, is set for DVD release in late 2020. Chatra Chap for VOA News, Washington.
The resiliency of journalists who brave arrests, attacks, and repressive legislation was celebrated at the annual International Press Freedom Awards last week. Hosted by the Committee to Protect Journalists, the 2020 awardees are from Bangladesh, Iran, Nigeria, and Russia. VOA's press freedom editor Jessica Jarit has more.
Protests, violence, and coronavirus-related restrictions. Journalists have never been so tested as this year, says Courtney Raj of the Committee to Protect Journalists.
On top of the kind of perennial threats that you have to journalists and media outlets around the world, from censorship to imprisonment to murder, you now have a global pandemic which has fundamentally reconfigured economic, social, political systems, and you've never needed journalism more.
This year, the committee honored journalists in Bangladesh, Iran, Nigeria, and Russia, who have shown the importance of independent media amid great opposition. Journalists like Dabo Olorioni, co-founder of Nigeria's Premium Times. Arrested twice for his reporting, Olorioni says the media are working in more restrictive environments.
We have about 28 constraining laws in our statute. I just make the work of journalism is a very difficult and nervous experience in the country. Increasingly, too, I think with the whole developments around cybercrime in the country, we have some of these really crazy laws that then criminalize the work of journalism.
Laws around the use of electronic media and false news are also a problem in Bangladesh. Photojournalist Shahid Alam says press freedom there has gone downhill.
We were under military rule at one point. That's when I had a loaded gun pointed at my head. When democracy came, we thought things would change. But this is by far the worst it's ever been. I think we live in an environment of fear.
In Iran, where access to independent journalism is limited, freelancer Mohammed Masood covered corruption, economic sanctions, and protests on his now suspended social media accounts.
We and a lot of journalists around the world have relied on people like Mohammed in times of crisis. He's providing a service to Iranian citizens and to the international community at the same time. And for him to be jailed just for stating facts under those dubious charges, it just shows how the Iranian government disregard of media and of journalism in principle.
Because of her work, Russian journalist Svetlana Prokofieva was convicted by a court in July of justifying terrorism. Despite the risks, she remains committed to journalism.
What we do is normal and should exist in a normal society. But if we abandon our profession, stop what we do, then our country, our society as a whole, will be even further from normality, from civilization, than it is now.
With journalism under threat, the work of international lawyers like Armel Clooney is ever more important to defend press freedom, says Raj.
The recognition of Armel Clooney with the Gwen Ifill Press Freedom Award this year really recognizes the symbiosis between the legal community and the journalistic community. We need each other.
With press freedom under attack, that support has never been more important. Jessica Jarit, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Continue online with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all at VOA Asia. And at our website, voanews.com. As we thank you for joining us, we thank the team that brings this program to you every day. Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.